two. One more time.
Welcome to Hungry Magazine Culinary Podcasting. All of our podcasts can be downloaded at www.hungrymag.com. This week we sat down with Chef Grant Elliott Bowles of Avenues Restaurant in the Peninsula Hotel in Chicago. Chef Bowles has worked at some of the finest restaurants in the country, including the Mansion on Turtle Creek, Charlie Trotter's, True, and the Jackson House Inn in Vermont. Chef Bowles has earned a nod as the Food & Wine Best New Chef of 2004, and since coming aboard at Avenues, he's earned 4 stars from an assortment of food publications, including the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Magazine. This week, I spent some time with Chef Bowles in the Avenues dining room for a few hours before service. Our interview turned into a conversational jam session with Chef Bowles riffing on music, food, art, and politics.
For the record, with the 95 Pearl Jam tour, I saw Pearl Jam perform the night Kurt Cobain killed himself. It was in D.C., and the whole stage was full of candles. It was the Versus tour. I was a ridiculous Eddie Vedder freak the time. So, just to touch on that.
Did they do any covers or anything?
No, but they were basically, you know, they're obviously really emotional, and they were like, you know, if we leave in the middle of a song or the set, you know, I hope you guys understand. But then they, you know, they played a whole big deal, and it was awesome. So, yeah, I used to sing and play guitar. I still do. Aaron Elliott, our sommelier and wine director, he plays bass. So nice. We're always looking for a drummer to round us out.
Yeah.
But, well, it was funny because Alan Richmond, the writer, was recently in, and he was saying that he did a story before on how all chefs are just failed guitarists. Like, you know, they couldn't make it. They decided they didn't want to live in the van and play, you know, shows and scrape by, so they cooked. Yeah, you know, I thought that was pretty hilarious. I started thinking of all the food people I know that play some kind of instrument that...
I think any artist in some way might be a failed artist in a different discipline,
yeah.
You know?
It's always
creative, you know?
And you're always trying to find your voice and find out what... You know, now we view this as our medium, you know? And it's funny because the music we used to play was, you know, like I guess you would classify it as indie or emo or, you know, that whole kind of scene. And then, you know, you're screaming and you're playing, you know, electric, and then all of a sudden you tap into like Simon and Garfunkel and realize that that's like the essence of it, you know, and you start playing acoustic. So it's the same thing with food, you know, you're always pushing boundaries and trying to do something, and then you might find, you know, an old technique and brings it all the way full circle again, you know, and you start looking at what, you know, cooking is all about, you know, taking something that's like a rough cut of meat and making it amazing and delicious and doing something with it versus just, you know, grinding Altoids and using, making it into a sauce. You know, that's cool too, but it's, you know what I mean? There's a different beauty with each one.
You know, Chef Trotter, I think, always talks about how he likes to improvise like a jazz musician.
Yep.
Do you liken your cooking to any type of music or any type of style?
No, I think anything. You know, I view food, again, as an art. I think, and I've used this is funny, Pearl Jam analogy again. If you really respect them as musicians and artists, you go and listen to what they have to say, because obviously the reason you get into that is to get something across to people, right? So to play to 20 people in a club is cool, but to play to a stadium of 20,000 is really neat as well, or even better. So if you're a real fan, you want to listen to what they have to play. You're not going to sit there and just scream for them to play Jeremy, you know?
Right.
Same thing with food. I think the real connoisseur or gourmand that comes in here, it's usually you do your thing, you know? I'm here to let you cook or whatever you want to do. And that's where, in the last few years, it's really changed. More and more people are doing that versus coming in saying, I want the steak, you know, mid-well with a side of potatoes. That's kind of going away. I mean, their food will always be there to satiate somebody's hunger, but it's really, you know, with the likes of, you know, Grant and Charlie Trotter and Thomas Keller, and, I mean, it's really pushed into the art aspect has come to the forefront, and a lot of people are coming in and just saying, you know, do your thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that in the next few years I think will be even more so. You know, you will go to Butter to experience Ryan's food. You will go to, you know, True to experience Rick Tremonto and Gil Gann. It's versus just going to this restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a great step forward.
You know, because I'm one of those guys who goes to a concert. It's like you hate the people who yell Freebird, but, you know, the ones who are always asking for the hits. You know, let the artists play what they play.
Yeah,
so.
And I think that's what's cool too is, if you have a good understanding of music, or if you have a good understanding of art or anything else, you can appreciate the nuances of, oh, this is that song, but you see they're mixing this and this, or they added this here, and, you know, versus people that are like, I didn't enjoy the show because, you know, they strayed away from, you know, what they should have done. They, you know, that song was only 3 minutes on the record. Why is it 10 minutes at the show? You know, I didn't like that. So, you know, you're always going to have people the same thing. You know, I came in and I had the 20-course menu and only like three of them because they were the ones I understood, you know? So
yeah.
It's always going to be a learning process, both, you know, in both regards to the chef and to the guest. And I think, you know, it's like when you go to WD-50, or, you know, I've been there three times now, I'm sure there's going to be maybe, you know, a lot of hits, some misses, whatever, but I love the idea and the reason that the chef thought of this dish was because of this and that, you know, and I, even if it's to the palate isn't like, oh, I want a huge bowl of it, it's like you still love the idea behind it. So
let's extend the metaphor a little bit. You've got some great hits. I think, you know, the Folly Pop, mm-hmm. I think is something, you know, your work with the pop rock, so it's a little bit unconventional. I'm curious, you know, where did you come up with those ideas? How did that kind of come about?
I don't know. I think it's fun to be able to take from everything, you know what I mean? And whether you're at the store and you see grape flavored bubblegum and you start thinking, what if I could make, you know, a soy bubblegum that, you know, somebody eats as a little chiclet after they have a sushi course, or what if, you know, we utilize this or this, and like I always say, there's this great, you know, chefs are big idealists, you know, and there's a lot of them from the last generation that believe that everything has to be made from scratch at the stove every morning, you know, and that's a beautiful concept and everything, but, you know, nobody's milling their own flour, making their own sugar, doing all this other stuff. So it's kind of like, you know, some people will look down upon using these other ingredients, whereas I see, again, everything is open for us to pull from. So, if, you know, why would I spend a million hours trying to perfect a pop rock when I can go and buy a pack of them across the street, you know, and they're bringing the desired result to the table. So, I don't know, I just, you know, if you start to look at every ingredient as its own thing. So foie gras is rich and creamy, then you need something to juxtapose with, you know, that's got texture and acidity and this and this. And so pop rock seemed a natural foil to that. So being able to, you know, puree and make almost a panna cotta or mousse out of the foie gras and put in a little sphere and coating it in the pop rocks, it was easy to eat. You got the zingy effect or effervescent effect from the pop rock. So it all kind of made sense. Just like the Altoids, you know, you put that into a jus because mint classically goes with lamb, and you couldn't get a sauce strong enough, you know, mint oil or mint puree, you know, well, it was nice and fresh, but it didn't really have the desired result. And then you're sitting there eating Altoids as you're thinking this, and you're like, you know, what a no-brainer, just dissolve it in the jus and it's done. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things like that, and any musician, you know, that loves music, that, you know, you everything you hear, the siren right now, you're thinking of how it, you know, the rhythm, the beat, the everything. You know, it's the same thing in food. You're looking at a piece of equipment and thinking, how could I use that to cook something or do it or puree it, or, you know, what about this? Or, you know, like Omar always talks about, you know, I want to have a restaurant where somebody could eat the table when they're done, you know, with their meal, or eat the chair. Like, just, you know, it sounds crazy, but it's kind of like, you know.
He's got the menu down.
Well, so. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, when you start thinking that way, I think that's what's awesome, you know. And it's, again, and you might stumble here and there, but the goal that you're trying to achieve, whether it's food, music, painting, whatever, is, you know, who's to say it's right or wrong? And that's what's so funny is, in the art world, you know, somebody can paint a canvas just black, and you'll have people like, you know, I'm not going to say my parents, but, you know, people that, you know, that would look at it and just say, yeah, that's not art, anyone can do that, whatever, you know. And you think about it, you know, with that kind of logic, but then you can also look at it and say, wow, I empathize with that person. They were going through their depression and this and this, and this is what they were trying to achieve. And so it's once the guest knows more about what you're trying to do and you can convey that to them, I think that they have a much greater respect for what you're trying to do. And that's what it's all about, you know, even if they don't love every single bite they're having, you know. And again, everything is about flavor and you want things to taste delicious. But I think when you look at the whole concept of dining now versus just eating, you know, that's a great thing, you know?
I think, I like that you mentioned the effervescence and the pop rocks. As I look at your menus and see what you're doing, I feel like, you know, everybody always talks about the five senses or the five tastes, you know, with your, you know, your sweet, your sour, your umami, and all these things. And I feel like you're almost adding a sixth sense there, like effervescence, because you do a lot of sodas now, and you do a lot of, you know, with the pop rocks and things like that, and it's almost like there's another thing out there that wasn't there before.
Right.
You know, that I think the thing I think about too is I know one of the things one of your mantras or one of the things you talk about a lot is, you know, if it's not broke, break it.
Mm-hmm.
What are you breaking now? What are you guys working on breaking in the Avenues Kitchen?
No, I don't know. I think what's funny now is that, you know, the team that I have, it's only four cooks and they all have a different background, so I almost, you know, throw the ball back to them and say, you know, you've seen what we do or what I can do and what my ideas are. What can you bring to the table now? So, you know, somebody has a Puerto Rican background. Somebody has, you know, a degree in poetry. Somebody else is, you know, from Southern Georgia. So, you know, I want to do this with, you know, boiled peanuts. And if we braise them for hours and do this to them, and then we can expand them in the dehydrator. And then somebody else will say, you know, well, what if we, you know, plate it this way and have all, you know, and they have all the touch and all the love to it and stuff. I think, you know, again, the idea of the chef is the know-everything, iron fist person with the vision and everyone else is following. I think that's kind of gone now. It's now just like a band, you know, or anything else. You have these people that you've shown what you're all about. You know, you've expressed yourself and they buy into it and now they're able to contribute as well. So some of the things we're doing now, it's, you know, we don't want to be typecast. And I think it was really interesting, right? After we got the Tribune review in July, you know, they mentioned this kind of thing, or the Pop Rocks, or this, and we thought it would be neat to almost go counter that now. And so now the menu is, it's still creative, but it's much more, I don't want to say balanced, but I think it's a little more grounded, you know. I think it's delicious, it's flavorful, it's seasonal, it's everything else, but it's still our own style, you know, but we're not relying on always having to have that one hit to pull out or always having, you know, just like with Grant's liquid, you know, the truffle explosion. It's, yeah, it's an awesome thing, but do you want that to be, you know, the weight around your ankle for life?
Right.
And, you know, that's one thing that I learned at Trotters was you never go into the studio and play the same song twice. So, you know, it's the same thing with food. If you've done it, it's kind of been done. Why would you want to keep rehashing it? So with that, you know, we've kind of gotten away from the Pop Rocks and the Altoids, and, you know, none of that is really on the menu right now. I'll give you a copy of the menu.
Sure.
when you leave, but
I don't know if the current menu is what's reflected on the website, but one of the things I saw on there that I thought was interesting, I was curious about, was the pine needle marshmallows.
Mm-hmm.
With your celeriac bisque.
Mm-hmm.
Real pine needles.
Yep.
You steep those.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
we get white pine. And the one thing we used to use those in Vermont, we always thought, you get these books on foraging, you know, and old Boy Scout books, so you can see what's edible and what's not. But they always say white pine, you know, if you look at the cluster of the needles, it's it has five, and there's five letters in the word white, so you know which ones are good. The only thing is sometimes they, like when you use them with certain products, like meringue and things, they almost break down. You know, there's a chemical or something inside the actual pine that does that. So
cool.
Now we're actually doing chive marshmallows with a potato leek tureen and sour cream foam and bacon powder. And then at the table we'll pour a twice-baked potato bisque,
nice.
You know, out of, you know, Russian fingerling potatoes and everything. So, and, you know, it's a purple Peruvian potato tureen. So, again, the concept is there, the ideas are there, but when you eat it, it's, you know, it's like a potato soup with 9-year-old grated cheddar on it, and
sure.
It's like eating the sexiest baked potato ever. So, you know, it's doing things that aren't just there to wow people that one time, but to have them say, wow, this is creative and delicious, and, you know, I want to come back. You look at successful, you know, you look at the people in New York that people talk about, with the exception of, like, a Wiley, but it's like Danielle, John George, Eric Repair, and those are guys you talked about 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and they're still at the forefront now, so I want to be in it for the marathon, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I want to be somebody that they're talking about years from now and is keeping that standard alive versus just doing something weird and,
yeah.
and then be done, so.
Well, you know, I just saw, I was watching Mark Bittman's show on PBS, and I saw he was cooking with John George, and John George does a roasted squab with the Jerusalem almond, and it melts on
nice.
The, you know, and it's like, I'm like, hey, that's Grand Melly Bowl, same kind of concept, you know? And it was funny, because Bittman actually went out, ran across the street, because he does the duel with John
yeah.
George, and he got a box of Red Hots, and they melted the Red Hots
really?
On the squab. And
see, yeah,
that's you know, awesome. It was somebody commented that it was like weird tandoori chicken, you know,
the red melt, yeah,
but it makes sense, you know,
yeah.
And the reason Jean Georges and these guys are still on the top of their game is because they're not afraid to experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think.
Well, like at the French, or at Per Se this summer, one of the courses was this chocolate dessert, you know, and they pour this chocolate over the ice cream, and it's set, you know, and it's like a magic, it's magic show, you know, and it's kind of like, that's fun and whimsical, but it's like, you know, at my place, I would just go and buy magic shell, you know, and maybe warm it up and infuse it with my own thing, you know, make it Mexican chocolate style, or do whatever you're going to do, and then you could put it, you know, into another container or whatever, but I don't know, it's just funny, because I imagine some poor soul back there that's having to, like, you know, do all this investigation and all this work
sure.
and all that, you know, just to get the same result as somebody already did 50 years ago, so.
Yeah. I know you started out, I think you were a plus point at dishwasher before you went to culinary school.
Yeah, I actually dropped out of high school and went into cooking school right after that, because I was a dishwasher and then, or a busboy, and then moved into a dishwasher and started doing all the prep, and the chef had gone to cooking school, which was right down the road, and I figured, okay, well, you know what, I hate school, I don't know what I want to do, so I figure I can just do this. So the day I turned 18, I went and got my GED and then went into cooking school right after it. And it's funny because I look at a lot of my friends who really didn't have any kind of path or clue, and it's like, well, they go through school because that's what they're told to do, then they go to 4 years of college and they get like a communications degree because they didn't know what to major in, and then, you know, now they're working at the record store or, mm-hmm. you know, wherever, because they still haven't. And I was, you know, blessed to find this outlet. And what was really neat was it was kind of the music thing, like, well, I can play my music as fun and food will, you know, I can always get a job wherever I end up and I can make a paycheck. And then I came across like the Trotter book and saw food as art, if you will, and realized, wow, this could be my own creative thing. And you know, and I started pushing the boundary, especially like in Vermont, when it was like my real first chef gig, you know, way out there, doing all kinds of stuff, you know, just trying to, you know, dry curing our own tuna and grating it into a powder and putting it over like a saffron tapioca with, you know, paprika ice cream, all these kind of different things that, you know, again, two or more years ago, and in Vermont, so it was a little harder there to find an audience. But when I came here about a year and a half ago, you know, we were still trying to find our footing, do our thing, you know, there was the whole thing going on with Trio and Omar at Moto and these kind of things, so, you know, we wanted to be part of all of this style that was going on, you know, we were very excited. And I think in the last 6 months, you know, 8 months, we've really kind of said, okay, you know, if people want to include us in this whole group, great, if not, great, whatever, you know, we're doing our thing now. And I think we really hit our stride, and, you know, the last 3 or 4 menus we've done in that time have really reflected that, and they're it's really tasty, it's fun, it's whimsical, but it's its own thing, you know. And I think compared to 99% of the other restaurants in the city, yes, it's much more out there, but compared to a Moto or a Linea or places like that, you know, maybe it's not at that end of the spectrum, but it's still, I think, within the same philosophy and approach that these other guys have.
You know, you've cooked, you mentioned the Inn in Vermont, and you cook here at Avenues, and you mentioned Turtle Creek as well.
Mm-hmm.
You cooked in a lot of, I don't know, hotel or inn type restaurants. Does that make a difference in terms of how you cook, or are there challenges inherent in that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I started off cooking, I went to the Norfolk branch of Johnson & Wales, so I cooked in a lot of independent restaurants there, and that's kind of what I knew. And then when I went to Dallas and I did my externship, I was working at Star Canyon, which was its own independent restaurant as well, and, you know, wanted to be part of the best, which at that time, you know, the Mansion on Turtle Creek is 5-star, 5-diamond, et cetera, et cetera. So I went and worked there. And when working there, you know, it's funny because you learn this valuable insight to, there's places that you want to work at and there's places you want to eat at, you know, and it's really easy to confuse the two when you're young, you know, and I was 20 years old when I was working there. And you step back and you can really realize there's certain restaurants that can give you a ton of knowledge. You know, the chef is there, it's a really small, independent place, he's there every night teaching you, doing whatever. Then there's the place that's fancy with all the bright lights, and you go and work there, and it's, you know, the money they should be spending in the kitchen maybe is being spent on that PR to make them look great, whereas, you know, maybe it's a good place to eat, but, you know, not that it wasn't a good place to work, but I think you just learn these certain things that, you know, are very valuable when you're young and on the path to what you're trying to do. So after that, I kind of dedicated myself to, okay, I want to work with somebody great that's going to lead me in the right direction and show me the deal. I was going to go work at, like, the Inn of Little Washington because it was close to where my girlfriend was. But then I decided if I was going to go anywhere, then I would try to go to Chicago and work for Trotter. And that's what I ended up doing. And I did that for about a year and a half. I look to where opportunity is, you know. And my first chef gig, you know, I found off of the internet by you know, looking
Star chefs,
things like, yeah. And it was, you know, the one, you know, I didn't care if it was a place in the middle of Nebraska or Hawaii or, you know, I just wanted my, you know, I just turned 26 and I wanted my own kitchen. I was done with working for these star chefs. I wanted to become my own, you know, and that's what, that place allowed me to do that, you know. Hey, it's 50 seats, you run the kitchen, you do whatever food you want, you know, but we happen to be an inn out in Vermont. So it was like, wow, I could, you know, do my own in a little Washington thing. It'll be great. But
Were you, you know, when you were working for Trotter at that point, I mean, were you going home and developing your own style? Was that something you were able to do under Trotter? How did that come about?
No, I think, you know, at Trotter's, it's very much, this is how you do it. And, you know, the mindset is we kind of break you down and then build you up how we want you, kind of military style. Mm-hmm. And it's great when you're young and you learn that. But when you go back, it's kind of different because you've already started to come up with your own ideas, you know. And so it was different, but it was worth, you know, kind of biting your tongue and everything in that aspect of creativity to learn management and all the other kind of things that you learn in that capacity as an executive chef under somebody like that. But when I went to Vermont, I kind of knew what kind of food I wanted to do. You know, I've always, over time, you start to develop your own style, and it's kind of like if I cooked in New York or Chicago or L.A., I'd still be doing the exact same food that I'm doing now. And that's what people ask a lot, like, is a hotel, does it hold you back, or does it, you know? And the thing is, you know, especially in the peninsula, it's extremely empowering.
There was an interesting question you asked on one of the food boards a while back, and it was respectful, but you had asked about masa, and you had talked about how, you know, you joked you could almost fly to Tokyo and have almost an equally good dinner. And you know, I thought that was an interesting question. One of the things I've been thinking about is this idea. I mean, even, you know, your three-course meal here is $75, mm-hmm. and that's not accessible to everybody. I know you can't be all things to everybody. But one of the things I've thought about is this idea of, you know, these good chefs or these well-trained chefs. And, you know, I think you see it in Paris a lot where they, you know, a guy like Ducasse will open up his big place, but then he'll do, yeah, like Spoon or that kind of thing. You know, do you think there's a place for that in Chicago where once you've established yourself down, open the bistro? You know, I know a lot of chefs talk about Hot Dog a lot. They always talk about, you know, at Doug Stone, you know, yeah. I love to go to that place. And, you know, here's a guy who took his culinary knowledge, but he applied it to something that's accessible to the public.
If you go to Kendall College, they have the giant pictures of all the chefs that have gone there, you know, and it's like, you know, I went to Kendall and I'm the exec chef of so-and-so, and then there's a big smiling picture of Doug, and it's like, I went to Kendall and now I make hot dogs. And I just think it's hilarious. But I mean, yeah, I mean, I love that kind of stuff, and I totally think that that this food should be accessible just like anything else. And I know other chefs, I'm not going to say names, but if you look at the chats recently, there's some people that are like, you know, the beauty of this food is that it's not accessible and that it is, you know, so I understand both sides, but again, if I could fill this dining room with 1,000 people a night that were into what we were doing, why would you want to limit it to doing 20 people a night?
Sure.
That, you know, and that's what I think. I mean, not that it's like food for the proletariat or anything, but it's kind of like, you know, the more people understand about food, the more that they're gonna pass it on to other people, and it's a great thing. Where again, 10 years ago, nobody was thinking of these things. It was a bunch of chain restaurants and everything else, and now There's so many different varieties of food out there. And I look at, you know, like, you have Chez Panisse, and you have, like, you know, the cafe. And, you know, you have Trotter's, you have Trotter's To Go. Or you have True, and you have Osteria Viestato. And I think it's an awesome idea to be able to present your ideas in different ways. You know, my goal is to be not a chef owning his own one tiny restaurant that's, you know, the mecca. I want, you know, an empire of 20 restaurants, you know. I want a Latino joint, I want a steakhouse, I want a cafe, I want a, you know, and I think if you have the ideas and everything else, then you know, let it fly. Just like music. I you know, I can play punk when I'm plugged in. I play, you know, acoustic or whatever, and then sometimes we're playing ska. It's kind of like, you know, so you see so many people that have their quote-unquote side projects, you know, because they don't want to just play, you know, this one style of music all the time. They want to be able to go and do all their different things.
Definitely.
So,
you know, another thing I know you care about or you've talked about is the, you know, really is in some Chicago institutions, you know, or the Berghoff, of course, you know, Trader Vic's.
And now you got Trio.
Trio.
Yeah.
Do you have some favorite institutions that are still around that you like to frequent or that make you feel good about being here?
I don't know. I mean, there's some places, you know, I love Quang Noodle right here on Chicago and State because I used to live right around here, and he's a great guy. And, I mean, I love Bijan. I mean, it's not so much an institution, but, you know, a place that I can go, and whenever I do, you know, they'll have an iced tea for me. They know what I want and that kind of stuff. You know, Melrose Diner, places like that where they're still independently owned. I think that's what's really important is to realize that large corporations, you know, they're not bad. They're, you know, I love the McRib. I'm always going to support the McRib, but you know, McDonald's is not hurting for money right now, you know, and it's kind of, I love the idea that, you know, when you realize how hard it is to open a restaurant and to go through everything it takes to finally achieve that, it's like you almost want to just go and give them money just to, you know, hey, you made it. Like, so it's, you know, I like little ethnic eateries especially, you know, you hear the story and their family made this recipe and that's, you know, what they're known for, so that's what they're going to do here. And I just think, you know, that's America in a nutshell. It's like what it's all about, you know, and I just love that approach and mentality. So I just thought it was interesting that just as Chicago is like, you know, Vogue and GQ, everyone's wanting to write about, you know, Alinea, Moto, Avenues, Butter, Scylla, you know, all these young kids doing their restaurant. It's like, okay, Trio, Berghoff, you know, Marshall Fields, you know, all these things closing at the same time. And it was just like, you know, it was just interesting to step back and look and say, you know, it's almost like the changing of the guard, if you will, you know.
Dude, you're putting them out of business, man.
No.
I know, I'm just kidding.
But I just thought it was interesting time. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know, when I moved here like 7 years ago, you either worked at La Francais or at Trotters. Mm-hmm. You know, that was it. And then True came on board, and then, you know, Nomi, and then Blackbird, and then all of a sudden there's this, you know, now it's a food city. But it's kind of, you know, it wasn't that way before. And there's always, you know, good restaurants and stuff, but, you know, there was nobody of that level, and now there's so many more choices. And I think it's great that, you know, all of us really get along, you know, this new group, if you will, and we respect each other, and there's enough business to go around to sustain it, you know. It's not like one opens and everyone's freaking out because they're going to go under now. So, you know, the more the better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of, like, old architecture. But the other thing, I think one of the things I always agree with Mayor Daley is always, like, you know, if you don't grow, you die. Mm-hmm. You know, and I believe that, and I think that's why the city is as great as it is.
Yeah.
You know, and we've done what we've done. You're in the weeds. You had a bad night in the back, and your sous chef did something, and yeah, you stabbed him. you're on death row. Last meal. What's it gonna be?
Yeah, it'd be hard between a whole wheel of Laughing Cow cheese, which is one of my favorite things.
I like
love.
Laughing Cow.
Ooh, I love that stuff. I don't know. Maybe a meal of Filipino food like lumpia and pancit and adobo, and just, you know, there's these things that, you know, I lived in the Philippines 3 years because we grew up in the military family, and we used to go off base, go to the markets and all that. And there's like these little shack like bakeries, and they would make these things called pandesals that were just like little rolls, if you will, that were just hot, you know, and soft and just sweet, and they were amazing. So yeah, that would probably be it, you know. Finish off with that.
That's funny because one of the things when I was looking at, I knew you were in the Philippines, and you know, one of the things I thought about was, you know, and I understand it's probably not within the scope of the menu, but I was wondering, you know, why we don't see more Philippine influence maybe in your food, or you know, would you like to do like a high-end lumpia or
no? I think yeah, like a foie lumpia now. Yeah. I'm gonna put that on the menu soon. No, I think it's fun to be able to do that kind of stuff, but I think also, you know, there's a time and place for everything as well. You know, I don't know if it doesn't make sense to do sea urchin ice cream if nobody wants it. You know what I mean? Like, yes, it might be a great idea, and the three cooks that came in that night from so-and-so's restaurant, they really thought it was neat, but, you know, nobody would order a bowl of it, you know? So it's kind of like, you know, where do you draw the line on pleasing your own ego and satiating, you know, the guest's need for real, substance, so... But, you know, I think it's fun to be able to put different things on the menu from your background. But, I mean, I think I found my own kind of style. So I could do an interpretation of a dish. But I've also had people say, you know, well, I came here and I read that you had worked at the Mansion. I thought there'd be more Southwestern food. And it's kind of like, you know, Southwestern food is its own thing. And,
right.
You know, it's like I do GEB food. I don't, you know, and so-and-so right. does his food. And so...
At Jackson Pollock's mentor was like Thomas Benton Hart. Yeah, and I remember Thomas painted these like landscapes, and you know Jackson Pollock, you know abstract.
Yeah.
You know?
No, but and then but it's what's you know what's interesting too is every so often all the cooks and I will get together early before service or before work, and we'll go to a museum. You know, we'll go to a different museum and we'll look at the art and we'll look at how people discovered what their calling was with their art. You know, one of my favorites is Pete Mondrian, and he started, you know, landscapes and houses, you know, like portraits and things like that, and eventually got to its purest form of, you know, one yellow square with a red square and a black line, or, you know, things like that. And I love that same idea. It's almost like, okay, give me a 12-course menu, but every dish has to only have three ingredients. You know, is it going to be watercress with Kobe beef tartare and Bernays ice cream, or is it going to be this, you know? But it has to be, once you put those limitations on yourself, it almost it's almost forces you to be more creative versus having all the freedom to do things, which, you know, it might sound contradictory, but you know, the White Stripes actually do the same thing. They say, you know, give me a guitar and drum, and you know, we're going to have black, you know, actually their first album was called DeSteel, which is part of the whole, you know, the movement with Mondrian. So it's that same mentality. It's what if I only let you use these few things, what could you give me? Like, you know, everyone always says, oh, well, so-and-so is a great chef. Yeah, he's got all these millions of ingredients. Well, what can you do with a carrot? You know, show me what you can do with this one thing. And, you know, without your 50 cooks and fancy stuff, you know, what can you do? And that's, I think there's something to be said for that. But, you know, back to the museums, you look at Pollock, you look at, you know, Miro, you look at all these different people and their styles, and I think that it really opens the cook's eyes, because what I tell them is, right now at Avenues, we're doing my food, and when you leave and eventually become a chef or run your own restaurant or whatever, I want you to do your food. I don't want to see any of my kind of stuff on your menu. I don't, you know, and that's why when we do the plates and everything else, it could be served on a plate tonight. It could be served in a bowl tomorrow. It could be done with a paintbrush or with an offset spatula or with, you know, turned into a powder tomorrow and crusted on the item. I mean, there's nobody, you know, especially myself, saying it has to be done like this. And that's, I think you have to be at a certain level as a cook to appreciate that, because a lot of people, they need structure. They come to work with you, or I want to stage with you, or because they think you're going to show them all this amazing stuff, where it's almost, you know, counter that. It's more like, hey, you want to come here? You have the freedom to kind of express yourself, and I think that freaks a lot of people out. So, but I don't know. I think you just end up with a better product at the end, you know? It's that whole going to a studio and just letting everyone kind of riff and jam off of each other versus saying, no, read the music sheets. I want this played here, and, you know, I don't know. I can't think that way. I don't follow recipes. We don't have any recipes. We don't have anything written down, and you know, it changes all the time, so.
I think constraints are important. I mean, you know, you look at, I don't know, somebody like Ansel Adams. Here's a guy who was basically shooting with a wood box, and he's considered our greatest photographer. It's not the tools, you know, it's the ideas. It's what you're looking at. So.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about your tattoos, if you don't mind. I saw those. I think they're pretty cool, but.
Yeah. Well, I've got six, and most of them are band-related. This one says Innocence, and, what's funny is this is during my whole like emo phase, and it was actually done by the same guy that did the guys in Panteras when I lived in town, which is why it's written in like this old English. It makes it look like I just got it done in prison.
I thought you were going to say Rivers Cuomo. And like,
no, yeah, no, exactly. That's what's so ridiculous about it. I look like I'm ready to hurt somebody. And really, I just want to cry on their shoulder. This one is from Khalil Gibran, the book The Prophet. It's a hand holding people, but it kind of looks like fire. I have another one of like an old 1940s microphone up here, which is from the Promise Ring's first 7-inch from Milwaukee. This is 4Fs. It's basically Frisch, Fromm, Fröhlich, and Frei, which is like hearty, God-fearing, loving, and free. And it's the symbol for...
is it Celtic? Or?
What do you call it? It's German. But the band Jawbreaker had this as their symbol. So, again, I love to pace myself with bands that, you know, and then I have another one down here of like a maze with a man stuck in the middle of it. But, you know, I always tried to say I wanted to have tattoos that, even if I regretted them, I could look back and say, you know what, I was 19 and music was my life and this band spoke to me and saved me, and that's the story.
So you're relatively young. You're 28, right?
I just turned 29, January 4th, yeah.
You've done a lot, but there's a lot of time left. You know, what's your vision for the next few years? What do you want to accomplish?
I don't know, it's funny because I've always told myself, you know, like if I didn't have a restaurant by 30, I'd quit. So, you know, or I'd quit cooking. But, you know, I love what I'm doing now. And, you know, the Peninsula forged me to do my own thing. So it's almost like having my own restaurant. But, I'd love to be able to do a book. I thought it'd be fun, instead of the big ego-driven, beautiful, you know, book, to do a book more on the idea of where food comes from, like having it be a children's book and a pop-up book, and having it be like from the planting of something to the harvesting, the selling at the market, the cooking it, and the serving it, you know, and letting somebody understand all those different steps, you know. And again, it goes back to the more knowledge somebody has, the greater the experience they'll take from it. Okay. But I have two big bookcases at home, and they've slowly gone from like mostly cookbooks to like cookbooks being about 40% now, and the other 60 being government and politics. So I always toy with the idea of simply abandoning food and running for office. It's almost even better to say you don't have that to tie you down to that one way of thinking. You know, like I don't have a law degree, that means that I went to Harvard and have to do the, you know what I mean? To be able to say, you know, you've done many different things, but you know that this is your calling to serve, you know, and to work with people. So
I think all you need is what's within you.
Yeah.
I don't think you don't need the paper, you don't need whatever. You just have to work hard and you have to find it. So
creating food out of ingredients, or creating a dish out of ingredients, is great, but to be able to take your cooks in your front of the house and these other people and put them together to create a great restaurant is even better. So it's, what if you could do that on a larger scale instead of just a four-walled little kitchen, saying, what if I led the public, and what if we created this kind of idea and people followed it and we could achieve this, and you know what I mean, and leave that lasting legacy and footprint in history of doing something great. You know, food is great, but you know what? It's food. So, I mean, you can easily sit and think of something so long that it's, you know, that's all life is. It's all about food. It's all about music. And then you can just as easily think of something else, and then the other one seems less magical, if you will. So the thing is, I think to be able to do that, I lived in Vermont during the last election and the whole Democratic primary and everything else, you know, and that was Howard Dean state, and so it was really fun to see, you know, a doctor and former governor of Vermont, second smallest state in the country, get all the support, you know, and it was all through the internet, which nobody else had tapped into. And you see that, and then, you know, we went and listened to Wesley Clark speak, and you go and watch Kerry speak, and we, you know, because we were next to New Hampshire, so we went and watched everybody and talked to them, and, you know, Kucinich and all these guys, and I just thought it was awesome. I thought you could see through some of them and know that they're saying whatever you wanted to say. Mm-hmm. Then there were other ones that, you know, I...
Did you cook for any of those guys when they came?
No, I wanted to. I always wanted to do like a dinner as well for, like, you know, troops that were going to get shipped overseas, you know, especially in a small state like Vermont. You know, it is tiny, tiny. I mean, our town had 2,500 people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, somebody going off to the Gulf, it shakes them up. It's not like, you know, a big city where you might not know everybody. But I wanted to, like, get people together and have, like, their spouses and the troops be able to come and eat, like, a 12-course meal either before they went over or as they came back as, like, a sign of thanks. But, you know, working at Trotters and seeing, you know, every week bringing in kids from different schools or from the inner city, things like that, and letting them get a six-course meal and having every course is described by a different chef or cook, describing their idea of excellence and their style and all that stuff. You know, I thought that was just so cool. Like, you know, no, you know, it wasn't for press. It's not for anything like that. It's just the idea of this is, you know, again, this is one of my talents, and I have this restaurant that I can do this with, and this is what I want to do to affect change. And I just think that's the coolest thing.
Quickest way to somebody's mind.
Yeah.
Their stomach, you know?
Yep.
This ends this culinary podcast for Hungry Magazine. Check out www.hungrymag.com for more.
Three, two.